Hello there, and welcome to the second Quids In podcast. Quids In is a student-run investment fund full of keen traders in search of that golden opportunity. My name is George Thompson. I'm the co-founder, and we have six divisions who investigate technology, energy, currency markets, industrials, pharmaceuticals, and bond markets. This week, though, we are blessed with the presence of industrials and tech. So if you'd like to introduce yourselves, tell me what division you're in, what you're studying, and one fact about yourself.
Hi there, I'm James. I'm in the technology division and I play wheelchair basketball.
Very nice.
And I'm Jack. I'm also in the technology division and I like to trade stocks and shares.
Hi, my name is Trishel. I'm in the technologies division and I am a 5-time Brent cricket champion.
Hello, my name is Inal. I'm a head of industrials division and doing economics diploma and just studying right now. No time for other things.
I think that's good. We're dedicated to the cause. I'm so wheelchair basketball, that's good. And I mean, we've got a very sporting team on tonight. Well, that's interesting stuff we've got here. So this podcast gives you the opportunity to hear what trades these guys have been up to, what they've been considering, and what's going on in the world economy. So their job tonight is to try and convince you that the trades they've suggested are the ones to go for. Please bear in mind, though, that when you're listening, that all this podcast and all the information is for educational purposes only, so don't take it as personal investment advice. Okay, right. So before you bring us your companies and shares and trades, we're going to talk a little bit about the economy. So actually just in the US today, the retail sales announcement found out that actually very weak sales coming out of the US. So we've been obviously the crisis now 7-8 years ago, and we're still in this sort of time where confidence is so low. So I kind of want to hear from you guys, when do you think actually we're going to find actually a sustainable recovery, if it is at all possible?
I think one of the reasons like the retail sales are currently down is also linked to like petrol prices falling. I know that's one of the things that they've pinned to the recent results. So I wouldn't look at it in such a negative light, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, well, the stock markets did, didn't they? I mean, they've had a bad day today, the Dow Jones closing 1.5% down. So, I mean, is that just, you know, it may just be based on petrol prices, but do you think actually there's an underlying lack of confidence as well?
I'm pretty confident there is almost a lack of confidence out there. Obviously, consumers do spend like a large percentage of their income, or quite a significant percentage, on petrol itself or types of fuel. But I'm not 100% sure of the other figures, such as like spending on food and other like.
Now, I agree with Jack there. See, in America, there's been solid hiring right now. And along with that, obviously, there's been lower gas prices. So you would naturally assume that consumers would probably spend more since there is more hiring and lower gas prices. So they can obviously consume more. But instead, they're deciding to save more of that. So there probably is a lack of confidence there, which shows, because instead of spending more, they're actually saving more. So yeah, I actually do think there's a lack of confidence in America right now.
Yeah, I think within America in particular, there is a risk that the sort of strange financial news, so some days you get good news, some days you get bad news, is at risk of being overshadowed by all of the strange politics that's going on, and that everyone who's not a central banker is kind of unaware of what is going on financially, whether that has a knock-on effect on the economy, I don't know, but I think it's worth noting.
All right, my opinion is that the data is not a long-term one, so if we look at a larger span, then probably we'd see a growing trend. But if we look at the weekly and monthly data, then of course there might be up and down trends, and there is quite a lot of a bit of uncertainty as well on the market right now. if we're talking about financial assets, as markets are waiting to this Yellen's meeting.
To add on to that, when you look at America's economy, 70% of it is made up by consumption. But when you look at it more deeply, retail is only made up of 1/3 of it, whereas services is actually made up of 2/3 of spending. So although spending is down on retail, if you look at reports, spending has actually increased on services such as mobile data, internet, haircuts and things like that. So although figures show that spending on retail has actually decreased, you know, we kind of we need to look at the bigger picture there and look at other data such as other sources of spending, like I said, services, and you might get a different picture. So I don't really think that the fact that retail spending is down kind of paints the whole picture there.
I definitely agree that my personal opinion is that it's actually financial markets overreacting to a lot of news. So, you know, how dependent is America, which imports so much from China, dependent on the sort of fortunes of China? Obviously, it is important for financial markets, but the actual fundamentals of the day-to-day lives of Americans, it's not as big an impact as maybe the markets make out. And I'd say definitely, you know, retail spending is just a small proportion of overall GDP. So that'll be a place to watch. So other sort of announcements where financial markets have maybe reacted and overreacted and changed reactions that were bucking sort of the initial predictions was the ECB announcement. So the head of the ECB announced that they would reduce their interest rates to a further negative low, but then also followed up in the Q&A afterwards that he would be reluctant to lower them anymore. And in result, the euro rebounded, it strengthened based on the markets, investors believing that actually the ECB aren't going to bring rates any lower. So my question is there actually a connection between these sort of economic events, to which obviously like speculation on forex markets has a massive effect on the actual economy? So how big of an effect do you think this ECB announcement will have?
I think that these central bank announcements are hugely important in terms of investor confidence across the globe, not just within Europe, obviously. And I'm not sure whether, I mean, the recent announcement was not so much a warning, but it was it wasn't confident. But the ECB, years and years ago, has said, you know, they were really trying to steer clear of negative interest rates, and they didn't like the idea of quantitative easing, and now they're sort of looking to these policies because they've not got much left, and if these don't work, then it's undoubtedly going to have an impact in the economy. European banks are in enormous debt, and if that debt isn't repaid to them and Europe does enter another recession and the ECB is already using negative interest rates or quantitative easing, you have to question what tools they have left to deal with a potential recession.
So in my opinion, Europe is currently facing similar problems as US because the interest rates are ultimately very low, and the consumption is like the inflation rates are very low currently, and they need to somehow boost the consumption to make people spending. And that's why the central bank is trying to use these promises, which is in economics called forward guidance, so that people would be more sure on expected interest rates and would be more confident in planning. So these kind of actions from the central bank chief executives are very important.
I think it was like obviously done to like boost investor and consumer confidence. one of the things I think that's quite significant is before the financial crisis, we saw like rapid growth over like a 5-year period. And since the financial crisis and the double dip recession, we haven't seen such sustained rapid growth. It's been more stagnant, very slow, and it's more of an unstable market. So I think somehow they need to approach both consumers and investors alike.
Yeah, I definitely agree with everything that's been said right now. I think the lower interest rates or the negative interest rates definitely will boost confidence, not only through consumers, but for banks as well, because the lower interest rates or the negative interest rates will provide the banks with liquidity. And I think it'll have a major effect, not only on the economy, but like you said, on the Forex market.
So the follow-up question to that is, do you think they've run out of ammunition? Is there anything else that they're going to be able to do after this point?
I think that it's very difficult for a central bank to go anywhere once they've introduced negative interest rates. Especially given the high debt levels of European banks, I think between the three most indebted banks, they have a debt equivalent to the GDP of Spain. Even if you give them more cash through these monetary policies, will they be likely to lend that out if they have such high debts? I don't know. If I was running a bank and I had really unusually high debt levels and I was given some cash, would I be feel free to lend that out to consumer in an uncertain economy, or would I keep it and try and pay off my debts? I don't know.
So maybe helicopter money is the answer there. So rather than giving it to banks who, like you said, because they're so indebted, are actually just going to keep that money, just put £1,000 in everyone's bank account. I vote for that policy myself. I need that money. So do you think, is that a reasonable policy, or do you think that's just going to lead to the inflation that, Friedman talked about in the 70s and 80s? Anyone want to come in that?
Well, as you might know, in a medium run, all the monetary policy comes to is just an inflation, but in the short run it might increase the speed of adjustment, of economic adjustment back to the equilibrium and to the growth of GDP. So currently there doesn't really seem to be that much of an effect from these lower interest rates. Definitely not a good measure for the long term, in my mind as well.
I think that in terms of will these low interest rates really work, it's kind of debatable, because the low interest rates will make it really hard for commercial banks to actually lend profitably. So, we say now that the lower interest rates will boost the economy through consumption and increased investment, but in the long run, these banks got to make money somehow. They got to make profit as well. And you could probably expect them to kind of make some cuts here and there. So that way, at the end of the day, I think the result will just kind of go back to an equilibrium and we'll be back to where we always were. And then something else will happen.
I can't see them doing an awful lot more. I think mainly for Europe as a whole now, we need to focus on other economies such as the US and China, which obviously we can't impact ourselves, but it's the outlook of these economies that's going to affect Europe and the United Kingdom as a whole. So I don't believe there is much more that the ECB can do to help us.
Some interesting points there. Yeah, so we've got the budget coming up this week or next week, and obviously the international economy has made some serious impacts on the financial position of the government. So we are expecting some further budget cuts and some further austerity. So my question, I guess, is just, what do you think the state of the British economy is? Do you think it's too dependent on the international economy? And do you think that George Osborne can go further with his sort of austerity plans? Any one of those you can come in on.
Again, going back to the last point, I think that it's now mainly for us, it's confidence. And that's going to be directly linked to other markets. I can't really see us deglobalizing as such and keeping away from all these foreign markets that are affecting us personally.
Yeah, I think that in comparison to other economies, when you see, you know, Japan in particular struggling, China slowing down, Europe having all of the issues Europe has, Britain, the economy is doing okay. I think in comparison to the rest of the world right now, it's pretty sound. Some people say that we're too heavily focused on financial services, but at least with financial services, there will always be a demand for them across the world. You know, China's experiencing a huge slowdown in demand for its goods, manufactured goods, and it's struggling as a result. They're trying to rebalance their economy towards financial services, but the UK is kind of already there. So whilst we might be a little bit stagnant for now, we're doing okay. I think that George Osborne's budget will definitely have undertones of him fancying his chances as Prime Minister. So he might put a few nice things in there, but I think we're doing okay.
So again, yeah, I agree with James over there. I think George Osborne has a good plan going on, and like in the last few years, he's been doing the right thing. And right now, the UK economy has been expanding for 12 consecutive quarters, and it's on course to be one of the fastest growing countries in the G7. Having said that, though, I still do think George Osborne will probably increase the tax rates and cut government spending, so there probably will be austerity still. But it looks like what he's doing is pretty much on the right tracks, because the UK economy is doing pretty well.
Yeah, I tend to agree with his opinions as well.
Brilliant. Okay, well, interesting stuff. So that is just our Quids In analyst take on the world economy. So thank you very much for that. We'll move on to the companies that you've been looking into, and we'll start with the tech division. So the tech division have been researching, analysing lots of different companies, and have come up with three that they think is going to have some good growth prospects looking into the future. So I'd like to hear the first one. Let's start with Arm Holdings, shall we?
Okay, so I looked into Arm Holdings. They are a UK-based technology design company. They design technology to go into microprocessors. They develop their own intellectual property and some software as well. And they earn their money through royalties. So they sell their designs of microchips and tiny bits that go into microchips. And to companies that manufacture chips that use their technology, and then they then go into all the devices we use, so smartphones, cars, home appliances, and everything. So they're currently trading, they trade on the London Stock Exchange, and they're currently trading at just around £10 a share. And the reason I put Arm Holdings forward for the equity fund is that within the technology industry, everything's taken a little bit of a hit recently over the last 6 months. As a sort of indirect supplier of Apple, Arm's took a little bit of a hit, but that's not their their market isn't solely smartphones. That's only 45% of where all of their designs go. They're really looking into the growth in computing power of cars. So over the last 5 years, the computing power of smartphones has increased by a factor of 80, but experts predict that the computing power of cars is going to increase by a factor of 100 over the next 5 years. So Arm are looking to get ahead of that. They've developed lots of different designs to go into cars, and indirectly, by being involved in cars, they're going to be involved in the huge growth in the Internet of Things, which everything in the technology sector is looking towards. And whilst other technology firms are kind of stuck in the current period, in smartphones, in computers, Arm are really looking to the future, so that's why I put them forward.
That's definitely an interesting company. So I'd like to first of all focus on the sort of technology. So they've obviously very successful at the moment, got lots of clients. So what's to say that this sort of success is going to continue? And do you see, you mentioned the Internet of Things in particular, do you know if they've got any sort of contracts that in the short term, maybe a year to 2 years, of why necessarily the stock price is going to increase?
So in the immediate term, arms designs are in everything. It's estimated that 80% of the population of the world will have used a device today that had a design from ARM within it. So the short term isn't too much of a concern. They're in iPhones, they're in something like 90% of all smartphones produced. They're in the high end, they've got a product called Virgin 8, which is in low end smartphones. They've covered bases in the current period, but where they're really focusing is on 5 years' time, and 5 years ago they were focusing on now, and now they're focusing on 5 years' time. So they kind of, Simon Segars, who's the CEO, did an interview, and he said that with our business model, the share price tends to take care of itself over the future. They don't worry too much about what that's doing, and they've released above estimated results for the last quarter, and they're expected to do the same for this next quarter. And so their current situation is good, and it doesn't look set to change in the long term.
Does sound good from the management point of view that they're actually focusing on the products, they're focusing on actually providing value, and that value eventually comes back to value in the stock price, which sounds really good. My worry is, I mean, it's a British company, which is obviously a brilliant thing. What's to say they're going to be able to maintain this competitive advantage against the big boys in Silicon Valley? If that were to be one potential risk, what other risks do you think that ARM face?
I wouldn't be too worried about the fact that they're just a UK company, because whilst they have their headquarters in Cambridge, they have staff in every continent, well, other than Antarctica, they are the other six continents of the world. And they have offices in Silicon Valley, and they're such a market leader that the experts tend to come to them with their ideas. And they employed 681 people in 2015 across the globe, and with it being a British company, there are questions over Brexit and what that would happen, what effect that would have. But again, the CEO issued a statement a couple of weeks ago saying that whilst that he's not particularly worried which way Britain decides to go, because the main impact it would have is on their access to staff. And he said having to get work visas for European employees would be a little bit of a hassle, but it wouldn't affect their trade too much.
And I guess given the success that they've already had, being a British company hasn't stopped them making large progresses now.
Operated in Cambridge, they have a few smart fellas nearby.
Exactly, brilliant. Well, that sounds like a really interesting company. And I think we're going to be getting more information about the company on the website. So if you do have any comments about it, please do post on that page. Interesting stuff. Right, we'll move on then. So the second company, Jack, I believe you've got yours.
Yeah, so the second company that I've looked into and proposed is CapEx. It's an Australian-based company, but it trades on the London Stock Exchange on the AIM, so the alternative market. It's a world leader in the design and manufacture of supercapacitors, and it currently focuses on two areas. So the first area is for automotive industry, so cars, and they're mainly involved in stop-start technology, so it's a growth area from the environmental side of things. And the second and most interesting side of the company is its new Thinline range, which is designed for wearable devices, again, linked to ARM Holdings on the Internet of Things. Just to emphasise that CapEx is a tiny, small-cap company, so its market cap is just £10.9 million compared to ARM's much larger big caps. We tried to diversify slightly. And as of the 29th of April, CapEx holds the patent for the world's thinnest supercapacitor. And moving on, the main reason why we're pitching CapEx is because of its Internet of Things links, which has got a prediction to grow threefold by Forbes by 2020. And it's recently had an RNS update to all of us private investors. And it currently has one lead customer planning mass production trials for its thin line range, which is good for us from its massive growth potential, as well as an unnamed automotive giant has reported no faults on the trial orders it placed back in June 2015 of its automotive range. It also has the ability to mass produce, which is a massive drawback for other smaller firms on this scale. So they actually go through a company called Murata, which is based in Asia, and they would just charge a royalty. So if someone like Apple or Samsung quickly came along and said, we would like these your supercapacitors, your thin line range for us, they could easily start production to the actual requirements of the big players. And finally, they have their full 2015 accounts going to be announced on the 30th of March. So that's one of the main reasons why we're having a look at it now, because we're hoping they'll name one of those automotive giants at that publication.
Interesting stuff. Well, it sounds like it's got some serious potential. I want to learn more about those orders then. So we've got this sort of that large manufacturer. So what, I mean, how far, how much information do we know about that contract? And also, what current contracts does it have? What revenues has it got coming in at the moment?
So currently it generates about £3 or 4 million worth of revenue a year. That's from the automotive side of the industry. So we're mainly looking at the growth potential of the Internet of Things, the thin line supercapacitor side. At the moment, there's been multiple actual firms looking into it. You have to bear in mind the time it actually takes for people to use new components in their products. So for the likes of Apple, they may be now designing their iPhone 8 or 9, and it's at that stage that we'll suddenly see our components used. And they don't actually have any orders. They only have orders for the automotive side, but the orders that we are focusing on and the contracts that we're focusing on is the Internet of Things, because it's been 10 months since the launch of their thin line range.
Okay, so on that thin line range, what's the science behind it? So, like, how long are they going to be able to keep this advantage of having that the thinnest supercapacitor in the world? I mean, it's such a small company. What's to stop the big boys trying to come in on this area?
So, like I say, they spend a lot of money on R&D, and that's how they've ended up having the patent for this capacitor. The reason why it's unique is because it's half the size of its next smallest competition, as well as the fact it's flexible. So there's applications such as obviously your big name brands such as Fitbit that are now going towards the rubber style of straps, as well as there's talks of this being used as a diabetic drug delivery system. So just a patch you put on your skin and it would just constantly deliver you drugs. It's got the best in class power ratio for its size, as well as it's got a low resistance levels, which means obviously it has an almost unlimited charge recharge life cycle, as well as being more efficient. So much better than the competitors out there at the moment. And if a big player was going to come along, I would see them actually just buying out the firm, because it's only £10.9 million at the moment. So they may be happy to pay £100 million for the patent, and it's going to cost them less than it would to actually develop this own product for themselves.
Yeah, and there's definitely precedent, obviously, for that in tech. So that's definitely a real potential. Okay, final question. Let's just talk to us about the market, sort of the price, market share price. What's been happening with that?
So it was seen as a pump and dump share. So this time last year, its share price was about 1p. Then after they announced this, the actual supercapacitor, the actual patent for this thin line one, the share price rocketed. So it went up by over 150% over a 3-day period. It then retraced. They won an award from a French magazine and increased further. So now it's at about 5.5p in mid-July. The share price went all the way up to 8p on speculation of orders, and then has slowly dropped back. It's bottomed out at the moment in mid-January to about 2.75p, which is confident for us, because that suggests that that's just priced for the automotive side of the industry with no orders. And since then, over the past week, we've seen an almost 80% growth, and it's now about 3.95p.
I've heard you've got money in this stock yourself. How's that performing?
Not too bad. So I was involved right from the start. So I jumped on the bandwagon once they released this patent. I then sold later on, and I've just recently bought back in before the recent hike. So it's been quite good so far for me.
Brilliant. Well, good suggestion. That's one to watch. Okay, final one. Let's go.
All right. So my proposal is Baidu. Baidu is known as the Google of China. Similar to Google, it provides a search engine for websites, audio files, and images. And similarly to Google, its business model has also expanded from a search-only model to a plethora of other internet-based services such as multimedia and like similarly to like Google Maps and stuff. So the reason that I put Baidu forward is for one main reason. And so for anyone who doesn't know how search engines work, as users go onto a search engine and they search for things, the search engine's databases expand. And so currently Baidu have over 70% of market share. And so it's only natural that they have one of the most complex databases in China. And so we can be pretty confident that in the coming years, users will naturally kind of tend to use Baidu over other search engines in the market. And therefore, Baidu will be able to provide more targeted and more accurate search results. And through this, they'll be able to generate more and more revenue. So we can be pretty confident that in the coming years, Baidu's revenue will be greater and greater and will be increasing year on year. Another reason that I put Baidu forward is because Baidu actually have a stake in a video streaming platform called Ki. And Baidu recently announced that the CEO of Baidu, along with the CEO of the streaming website Ki, are teaming up to put a $2.8 billion bid to buy the 80.5% stake which Baidu have in Ki. And if this proposal does go through, then it will be quite beneficial for Baidu because the recent financials of Ki have shown that they are bringing down the operating margins of Baidu down by 5.1% in the second quarter of 2015 and I think 5.4% in the third quarter of 2015. So if this proposal actually does go through and Baidu manage to buy the stake or take if they manage to take the stake away from Baidu, then we'll be able to see that the operating margins of Baidu actually increase and it will bring in around $3 billion in cash, which will increase profitability, and we'll probably see the share prices boost from there. So another reason that I put Baidu forward is because Baidu recently announced that the chairman of the largest PC maker, Lenovo, alongside the former CFO of Uber Technologies, is actually joining the board of directors. So they will probably be able to bring new ideas and new innovative ideas to the board and take Baidu to new heights. So that's a very promising thing which Baidu announced recently. In terms of their financials, year on year, Baidu's revenue has been growing. From 2014 to 2015, revenues have actually grown by 35%, from $49 billion to $66 billion, while at the same time, net income has improved by 155%, from $13 billion to $33 billion. So honestly, I think Baidu is one of a good trade to make.
Right, really interesting. So let's just talk about, so equivalent to Google in China. So what's the market share?
Right now they have over 70% of market share, similar to Google, which I think last time I checked has 69.6% of market share.
Right, that is significant. And you don't see any sort of underdog players coming up and taking that sort of market share away from them?
Honestly, not at the moment. Because like I did say, like search engines, whoever has the best database will probably have one of the most accurate search engines, and you know, as users, we would naturally just tend to go for the search engine that provides the best results for us. So I honestly don't see anyone in the near time, unless they come through with some breakthrough technology, kind of overtaking Baidu's market share.
And how effective is the advertising team? So obviously, I would imagine compared to sort of developed nations like the US and Britain, where there's existing technology that a lot of businesses are online. I mean, I'm not too sure too much about the Chinese economy, but I'd imagine it's a lot harder to get that sort of advertising contracts in.
Yeah, definitely. Because obviously, for Google, it's different because anyone that speaks any languages can use Google, because obviously Google has algorithms that will translate anything, like any language to any other language, and they are so wide, like Google are so big that they can get companies from all over the world that want to advertise. Whereas if you look at Baidu, who are obviously Mandarin based, then it'll be kind of hard for them to try and get the attraction of a UK based firm or a US based firm, because you know not that many Mandarin users will be able to understand English, and so it'll be kind of a pointless advertisement on their behalf. So I definitely do think that the advertisement team on Baidu is quite far behind Google in that sense. But then again, I do think there's a lot of there's still a lot of potential for advertisement on Baidu. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we're running out of time, so I think I'll leave the questions there. So thank you very much to the tech team. Some really good companies there, and some serious potential that the team decided, the division, the whole fund met yesterday, and we decided to invest in both Arm and CapEx. So it will be interesting to see how their performance is over the coming months. Now, let's go on to the industrials division, and we have Inal, the division manager. So what have you got for us, Inal?
So today we're considering two companies which are both from industrials section. We are also supervising the mining section, but as you might be familiar, the industry is currently facing huge problems. So we're just focusing on these two companies. First one is Fos Agro. It is a global phosphate-based fertilizer producer, and it focuses on production of phosphate fertilizers, ammonia, and nitrogen-based fertilizers. There are around 28 internationally recognized brands produced and exported in more than 100 countries around the world. The company is based in Russia, but it's listed on LSE as well. As you might know, the fertilizers are absolutely crucial when it comes to the productivity of the farms. Nowadays, we observe an increasing global demand to the for the fertilizers. And in the long term, it's a positive trend. So among the competitive advantages of this company is that it's while it's being third in terms of phosphate production globally, it has the lowest costs among its competitors, and they stand at $145 per diammodium phosphate compared to $370 of competitors of the industry average. Moreover, there is a growing internal demand in Russia, as a third of the company's production is sold inside Russia, and high positive demand in India is observed as well, because India is benefiting a lot from the low oil prices currently, and it allows the country to increase the enormous amount of demand, to cover the enormous amount of demand for the commodities. What else? The company is very interesting in terms of recent sanctions that were introduced against Russia, and they turned out to be anti-sanctions for the company, as there is a trend to import substitution and to the subsidizing of farmers from the government. This allows them to buy more fertilizers and to boost their production. On the financial side, the company has had the best year since 2008, as it showed a 44% EBITDA margin, Moreover, there was an increase in revenues in all three quarters of 70, 59, and 63% respectively. In the long term, the company has quite a bit of interesting projects, and is currently there is a huge factory of fertilizer phosphates rock production under construction, and also what's interesting is that the dividend policy has been changed recently from 20-40% to 30-50% of the profit. So the company has just increased the share of profits that's gonna be paid out to the investors, and investors do like it, and we've already seen the hike in the price. Unfortunately, we observe low diminishing prices for the commodities that the company sells, but it can be said about all the commodities nowadays, and we have to face this reality, and the company offers better cost advantage, as well as it's boosting output whilst the competitors are nowadays reducing it. The Mosaic company, which is number one on the market from US, has just recently announced that it's reducing the output, but due to some factors that I've already mentioned, Potash Agro is managing to increase the output and boost revenues.
So let me just come in on that. It's quite interesting for me, a Russian company versus sort of like the big companies on Monsanto, the American giants with a lot of capital. So you mentioned India and how well the company is doing there. So what's to say that why are they so much more effective at growing in India versus American companies?
Yeah. As I've mentioned, there is a huge cost advantage. Plus, there are big agreements between the company, the long-term agreements as well. There are quite a few of constructions, like projects of under construction, whereas Indian companies are constructing some factories in Russia, and the idea is that this FOS Agro will be the main supplier of fertilizers for them in the future.
That is interesting. I mean, my second question really is fertilizers is a sort of utility business where it is just competition is done on price really rather than the product. So what again is the sort of competitive price advantage that is going to be able to sustain through the future?
So let me just talk about the share prices as it's more illustrative of how the company is doing. There has been a huge spike in the price during the recent months, while the prices for the commodities were really falling, so it really shows how the company is performing, and the analysts from many investment banks are predicting that the prices will be rising further, from currently around 13.5 pounds per share to around 16, but my prediction is that after the announcement of financial year 2015 results, there will be actually a drop in the price, and then it would be a good opportunity to buy after the rebound.
Mm. Well, that is an interesting potential there. It's a really good company. So we're at 45 minutes at the moment. So let's just, you do have another company for us. So yeah. I'm not going to ask any questions on this one, but if you just give us a minute or two, just quickly tell the listeners what the company is and why you think it's a good idea.
The second company is called Green Core Grocery. It's a leading manufacturer of convenience food with an annual turnover in excess of $1.3 billion, and it has around 15 production facilities in UK and 6 in the US. It's number one in terms of food to go category and this food to go sector is growing at 5% currently per year. So what we have here, these are mainly sandwiches, ready lunches and quiches that are, as you might know, very popular amongst the population. And as Warren Buffett was once said, you got to invest in the business that you are familiar with. I'm considering this business to be a good opportunity, as it is very stable currently, and it has very strong fundamentals, large positive cash flow of 78 million pounds, 10% increase in operating profit, and some other positive results. So my parents are from this business as well, and I'm aware that the demand for the sandwiches will be actually rising very fast in the coming period, in the coming months, while the quality of the food is improving as well. As there is a lot of uncertainty on the market, such a company could be a good opportunity, as and the evidence comes from the share prices, whilst the industrials and mining companies are falling, the share price of this company is behaving absolutely on the opposite. In February, we saw a huge spike from around 320 pounds per share to 360, and at the same time we had a fall in commodity in miners and industrials. So it could be used as a hedge against falling FOS Agro purchase.
That definitely sounds like an interesting prospect, and would like to ask you more questions, but we have run out of time. So that is really good company, and I hope that I'm a big fan of sandwiches, so I hope my impact will impact the stock price in a favorable way, because the fund has invested in that company as well. Okay, well, thank you very much for everyone who joined me and the listeners tonight, and it's been a really interesting conversation hearing your opinion on the world economy, and also what companies you think are going to do well despite those bleak times in the overall picture. So thank you very much, and I will hope to hear from you again soon. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well done, guys.